As they came to the opening in the wood, they were surprised to see knights in bright mail and tall guards in silver and black standing there, who greeted them with honour and bowed before them. And then one blew a long trumpet, and they went on through the aisle of trees beside the singing stream. So they came to a wide green land, and beyond it was a broad river in a silver haze, out of which rose a long wooded isle, and many ships lay by its shores. But on the field where they now stood, a great host was drawn up, in ranks and companies glittering in the sun. And as the hobbits approached, swords were unsheathed, and spears were shaken, and horns and trumpets sang, and men cried with many voices and in many tongues, "Long live the halflings! Praise them with great praise! Cuyo I ferian anan, Anglan I ferianath! Praise them with great praise, Frodo and Samwise, Dara Behail, Conin and Anrun, Eglerio, praise them, Eglerio, light a te, Andave, light of Almet, praise them, Corma Colindor, light a Tariena, praise them, the ring-bearers, praise them with great praise." And so the red blood blushing in their faces, and their eyes shining with wonder, Frodo and Sam went forward, and saw that amidst the clamorous host were set three high seats built of green turves. Behind the seat upon the right floated, white on green, a great horse running free. Upon the left was a banner, silver upon blue, a ship swan-proud faring on the sea. But behind the highest throne in the midst of all, a great standard was spread in the breeze, and there a white tree flowered upon a sable field beneath a shining crown and seven glittering stars. On the throne sat a mail-clad man. A great sword was laid across his knees, but he wore no helm. As they drew near he rose, and then they knew him, changed as he was, so high and glad of face, kingly, lord of men, dark-haired with eyes of grey. Frodo ran to meet him, and Sam followed close behind. "Well, if that isn't the crown of all," he said. "Strider, or I'm still asleep."
"Yes, Sam, Strider," said Aragorn. "It is a long way, is it not, from Bree, where you did not like the look of me? A long way for us all, but yours has been the darkest road."
And then, to Sam's surprise and utter confusion, he bowed his knee before them. And taking them by the hand, Frodo upon his right and Sam upon his left, he led them to the throne, and setting them upon it, he turned to the men and captains who stood by and spoke, so that his voice rang over all the host, crying, "Praise them with great praise!" And when the glad shout had swelled up and died away again, to Sam's final and complete satisfaction and pure joy, a minstrel of Gondor stood forth, and knelt, and begged leave to sing. And behold, he said,
"Lo, lords and knights and men of valour unashamed, kings and princes, and fair people of Gondor, and riders of Rohan, and ye sons of Elrond, and Dúnadan of the North, and Elf and Dwarf, and Great Hearts of the Shire, and all free folk of the West, now listen to my lay, for I will sing to you of Frodo of the Nine Fingers and the Ring of Doom."
And when Sam heard that, he laughed aloud for sheer delight, and he stood up and cried,
"O great glory and splendour, and all my wishes have come true!"
And then he wept. And all the host laughed and wept, and in the midst of their merriment and tears, the clear voice of the minstrel rose like silver and gold, and all men were hushed. And he sang to them, now in the elven tongue, now in the speech of the West, until their hearts, wounded with sweet words, overflowed, and their joy was like swords, and they passed in thought out to regions where pain and delight flow together, and tears are the very wine of blessedness. And at the last, as the sun fell from the noon and the shadows of the trees lengthened, he ended.
"Praise them with great praise," he said, and knelt.
And then Aragorn stood up, and all the host arose, and they passed to pavilions made ready, to eat and drink and make merry while the day lasted. Frodo and Sam were led apart and brought to a tent, and there their old raiment was taken off, but folded and set aside with honour, and clean linen was given to them. Then Gandalf came, and in his arms, to the wonder of Frodo, he bore the sword and the elven cloak and the mithril coat that had been taken from him in Mordor. For Sam he brought a coat of gilded mail, and his elven cloak all healed of the soils and hurts that it had suffered. And then he laid before them two swords. "I do not wish for any sword," said Frodo.
"Tonight at least you should wear one," said Gandalf.
Then Frodo took the small sword that had belonged to Sam, and had been laid at his side in Cirith Ungol. "Sting I gave to you, Sam," he said.
"No, master. Mr. Bilbo gave it to you, and it goes with his silver coat. He wouldn't wish anyone else to wear it now."
Frodo gave way, and Gandalf, as if he were their esquire, knelt and girt the sword belts about them, and then rising he set circlets of silver upon their heads. And when they were arrayed, they went to the great feast, and they sat at the king's table with Gandalf, and King Éomer of Rohan, and the Prince Imrahil, and all the chief captains, and there also were Gimli and Legolas. But when, after the standing silence, wine was brought, there came in two esquires to serve the kings, or so they seemed to be. One was clad in the silver and sable of the guards of Minas Tirith, and the other in white and green. But Sam wondered what such young boys were doing in an army of mighty men. Then suddenly, as they drew near, and he could see them plainly, he exclaimed,
"Why, look, Mr. Frodo! Look here!
Well, if it isn't Pippin, Mr. Peregrine Took, I should say, and Mr. Merry! How they've grown, bless me! But I can see there's more tales to tell than ours."
"There are indeed," said Pippin, turning towards him, "and we'll begin telling them as soon as this feast is ended. In the meantime, you can try Gandalf. He's not so close as he used to be, though he laughs now more than he talks. For the present, Merry and I are busy. We're knights of the city and of the mark, as I hope you observe."
At last the glad day ended, and when the sun was gone, and the round moon rode slowly above the mists of Anduin, and flickered through the fluttering leaves, Frodo and Sam sat under the whispering trees amid the fragrance of fair Ithilien, and they talked deep into the night with Merry and Pippin and Gandalf, and after a while Legolas and Gimli joined them. There Frodo and Sam learned much of all that had happened to the company after their fellowship was broken on the evil day at Parth Galan by Rauros Falls, and still there was always more to ask and more to tell. Orcs and talking trees and leagues of grass, and galloping riders, and glittering caves, and white towers, and golden halls, and battles, and tall ships sailing, all these passed before Sam's mind until he felt bewildered. But amidst all these wonders he returned again to his astonishment at the size of Merry and Pippin, and he made them stand back to back with Frodo and himself. He scratched his head.
"Can't understand it at your age," he said. "But there it is. You're 3 inches taller than you ought to be, or I'm a dwarf."
"That you certainly are not," said Gimli. "But what did I say? Mortals cannot go drinking ent draughts and expect no more to come of them than a pot of beer."
"Ent draughts?" said Sam. "There you go about ents again, but what they are beats me. Why, it'll take weeks before we get all these things sized up."
"Weeks indeed," said Pippin, "and then Frodo will have to be locked up in a tower in Minas Tirith and write it all down. Otherwise he'll forget half of it, and poor old Bilbo will be dreadfully disappointed."
At length Gandalf rose.
"The hands of the king are hands of healing, dear friends," he said. "But he went to the very brink of death ere he recalled you, putting forth all his power, and sent you into the sweet forgetfulness of sleep. And though you have indeed slept long and blessedly, still it is now time to sleep again." "And not only Sam and Frodo here," said Gimli, "but you too, Pippin. I love you, if only because of the pains you've cost me, which I shall never forget, nor shall I forget finding you on the hill of the last battle. But for Gimli the dwarf you would have been lost then. But at least I know now the look of a hobbit's foot, though it be all that can be seen under a heap of bodies. And when I heaved that great carcass off, I made sure you were dead. I could have torn out my beard. And it's only a day yet since you were first up and abroad again. To bed now you go, and so shall I."
"And I," said Legolas, "shall walk in the woods of this fair land, which is rest enough. In days to come, if my elven lord allows, some of our folk shall remove hither, and when we come it shall be blessed for a while. For a while, a month, a life, 100 years of men. But Anduin is near, and Anduin leads down to the sea, to the sea."
"To the sea, to the sea, the white gulls are crying, the wind is blowing, and the white foam is flying, west, west, away, the round sun is falling, grey ship, do you hear them calling? The voices of my people that have gone before me. I will leave the woods that bore me. For our days are ending, and our years failing, I will pass the wide waters, lonely sailing. Long are the waves on the last shore falling, sweet are the voices in the lost isle calling. In Eressëa, in elven home that no man can discover, where the leaves fall not, land of my people forever."
And so singing, Legolas went away down the hill. Then the others also departed, and Frodo and Sam went to their beds and slept. And in the morning they rose again in hope and peace, and they spent many days in Ithilien. For the field of Cormallan, where the host was now encamped, was near to Heneth Annwn, and the stream that flowed from its falls could be heard in the night as it rushed down through its rocky gate and passed through the flowery meads into the tides of Anduin by the Isle of Caer Andros. The hobbits wandered here and there, visiting again the places that they had passed before, and Sam hoped always in some shadow of the woods or secret glade to catch, maybe, a glimpse of the great Olifaunt. And when he learned that at the siege of Gondor there had been a great number of these beasts, but that they were all destroyed, he thought it a sad loss. "Well, one can't be everywhere at once, I suppose," he said. "But I missed a lot, seemingly." In the meanwhile, the host made ready for the return to Minas Tirith. The weary rested, and the hurt were healed. For some had laboured and fought much with the remnants of the Easterlings and Southrons until all were subdued. And latest of all, those returned who had passed into Mordor and destroyed the fortresses in the north of the land. But at the last, when the month of May was drawing near, the captains of the West set out again. And they went aboard ship with all their men, and they sailed from Caer Andros down Anduin to Osgiliath. And there they remained for one day. And the day after, they came to the green fields of the Pelennor,
and saw again the white towers under tall Mindolwin, the city of the men of Gondor, last memory of Westerness, that had passed through the darkness and fire to a new day. And there, in the midst of the fields, they set up their pavilions and awaited the morning. For it was the eve of May, and the king would enter his gates with the rising of the sun.